Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Good evening and welcome to the Simcast, your weekly source for occasional sim racing news, but mostly us getting off topic and eventually finding our way back if we remember to lay breadcrumbs. It's US week, so of course you're going to have to deal with me, Mr. Ben Williams, and him, the resident zebra botherer, Mr. Louis Satterley.
We're always off course.
Of course we are. How are you doing this evening, Louis?
I am incredibly tired.
I know. This is the second time that we've attempted to produce tonight's show, so
hopefully... Second time.
Hopefully, this will be the final time we have to do this. It is episode 15 of our 2021 season. Before I forget, be sure to follow us on Twitter at the @SimcastRadio using the hashtag SimcastRSL. If you have questions for us, or if you want to comment on the topics that we are discussing during the shows. And of course, we are all members of the collective. So we have a bit of a packed show this evening. Later on in the show, I will have a pretty extended interview with the guys from Podium Esports, where we're going to be talking about sim racing broadcasting and what that looks like compared to real life and a couple other things. And then we have like 2 weeks worth of esports roundup of the week because Matt and Jordan went pretty overboard when talking with James and Angus last week. We also do have three quickie stories that we want to share. Three quickies. And before we continue, I just want to assure the listener that this episode of the Simcast will contain 100% less trying to squeeze Matt into race cars with some type of lube.
No.
Whenever I heard that during the show last week, I just started going, no.
Oh, dear. That's just mortifying just thinking about it.
Yes. And unfortunately, it kept coming up. So try to quell that.
Shudder.
Try to quell that mental image and let's go ahead and get started. First of our quickie news, iRacing has revealed last week that the Porsche 911 GT3R will be coming in June, probably potentially in the season 2 update. Are we on season? No, we're on season. It would be season 3 update. Right? Yes?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And unfortunately,
yeah, season 1 for some reason starts in December.
Yes. And unfortunately, that's all the information we have at the moment. So we'll be on the lookout for that. Another quick story.
Looks like a Porsche. Sounds like a Porsche. Must be a Volkswagen.
Yeah. Is the engine in the back? Trunk? Then it's probably a 911. Or a Beetle. But who can tell the difference?
Must be a Volkswagen.
Yes. The another one of the quickie stories. If you are in a sort of... and a set of Corsa Competizione console player, you'll be pleased to know that the British GT DLC pack was released yesterday. as Kunos typically does, we're announcing DLCs while we're on the air, or shortly before we are on the air.
Or as any producer or game developer likes to do, is announce stuff while we are on the air.
Yes. It has all the other things that the PC pack came with. Set, Donington, Alton Park, all the liveries, the dedicated championship season, all of that fun stuff. It is also included in the ACC season pass if you did purchase that earlier. That's really it.
nice.
Yeah. Moving on. Gran Turismo Sport is now officially an Olympic game.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Basically, because, you know, COVID, the Olympic Committee has been trying to come up with different ways of having virtual Olympic events. It was actually announced that they're going to be partnering with 5 international sport federations, like the FIA, and game publishers to produce the Olympic Virtual Series, the first ever Olympic license event for physical and non-physical virtual sports. Gran Turismo Sport, because probably its connection with the FIA, was chosen as the motorsports portion of that series. This new initiative that they're calling is set to take place May 13th to June 23rd later this year, with further details expected to be revealed by the organizers once final arrangements have been put in place. So, be sure to be on the lookout for that. I'm not certain at this time, nor I don't think they've actually announced it, that what the type of, like, how people will be qualifying to get into that type of series, or if it's going to be, like, the quote-unquote traditional Olympic trials or something along those lines. They must already have some type of plan in place, because running a full qualifier, as we've seen in previous events, would take much longer than the time that they have left, which is basically 2 weeks from today.
Right.
Anyway, so that's just your 3 quickie bits of news. So, now on to tonight's featured interview. I sit down with James Pike and Tyler Burris of Podium Esports, where we talked about a couple different things, mostly what it's broadcasting esports, how that compares to broadcasting in the real world, and kind of their experience in this whole 2020 sim racing boom. Thanks to me from the future. So, with me, I have, from Podium Esports, James Pike and Taylor Burris. How are you guys doing?
Hello, Ben, and thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for agreeing to be on the show. So, I know you guys are primarily from your Twitch streams and your YouTube streams of your events. So, are you guys a esports, like, league managers? Are you just broadcast? What's Podium Esports all about, I guess you can say?
Our primary focus is definitely broadcast. There's no doubt about it. When we started, our model was to administer and run leagues and then broadcast them as well and handle everything top to bottom in a vertical integration. But as time has progressed, we've learned that for us to be successful and given our strengths, that it's better for us to focus more on the broadcasting side of things. So we are primarily a broadcaster of iRacing leagues. There are certain events every year, like the Podium 500 every February, that we will run as a one-off each year. And we will do everything in that sort of old-school vertical integration style that we used to run. But for us, it's primarily broadcasting of leagues. So some of the ones that people may have heard, I would imagine this group has probably heard of PCA Sim Racing, which is the Porsche Club of America's official virtual sim racing program that is run on iRacing, and one that I would highly recommend folks check out here if they get the chance on their YouTube channel. But we also run Monday Night Racing, which is run by Ford Martin at Fox Sports, is a coalition of media members and drivers from the NASCAR core. So we've had Kyle Busch in, we've had Will Power in races, James Davison. There are a few sports car folks that have trickled in, and IndyCar folks that have run in those races, but it's all about sort of getting big names together for fun on Monday nights. We've worked with the BMW Car Club of America to run their sim racing series as well. Anthony Alfredo, who now drives the NASCAR Cup Series. Various organizations, different tracks, New Hampshire Motor Speedway, Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway, the Real Life Solid Rock Carriers Cars Tour. There's definitely an oval focus, no doubt about it, but that's not to say that we love our road racing at Podium, because we really genuinely do.
Yeah, and I think you guys also do the ESDA as well?
Yes. That's the other sort of side piece of things, is that we handle just about all the big broadcasts in the world of virtual drifting. We've got a great team with our producer, Cisco Scamuza, and then our, I guess, their cast is probably in this sense, but Keenan Kustin, Strix Pulsatrix, and Ian Plash are some of the most dedicated drift people that I have seen. And I would argue that they are genuinely sort of pioneering that arm of things. And I hope that Bigger Eyes take notice and get the chance to see them in action, because I fully believe they definitely could offer a lot to the real drift world. And I think there are things that the virtual drift world can teach them and vice versa. But then again, isn't that the case with all sim racing, real racing? That it's supplemental, right?
Yeah, we actually had Keenan on the show last year, right at the like the peak of on the show.
I can only imagine. Yeah, that had to have been a time and a half.
It was so much fun. He actually stayed on after the interview, and we were talking about Assetto Corsa Competizione. And as a joke, I called it Assetto Corsa Calzone, and he lost his mind for about 5 minutes.
That would be Keenan. That would definitely be Keenan.
Yeah, I'm going to get him back on the show.
Yes, you should.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of esports stuff. Are you guys coming from, like, you're fans of racing and you want to do your own racing? Were you always, like, esports, or like, sim racing fans in general, and it just made sense to do this way? What kind of a coin are you coming from here?
TV, I'll let you. I have my thoughts, but I want to hear yours on this.
For me, honestly, this is just something that I've always been wanting to do for a long time. I mean, I started off with broadcasting when I was in grade school. Took a break from it for a while, and then came across some close associates that I haven't spoken to in a while through the iRacing service, who then invited me to come and participate in turn-by-turn calling play-by-plays for the SECA. So after doing that for a little bit, did races at VIR and Sebring, I came across a couple of people who did virtual broadcasting for esports. So after learning the ropes a little bit and just playing with different manners, I came across a couple of people over at Podium, DJ Lion, and then, of course, James, who kind of helped bring me into the group to work and learn even more so. And now I hopefully one day, if you know things happen correctly, make the right networking opportunities, hopefully one day to be working for someone like MRN or IMSA Radio or something like that. Because esports broadcasting, in a sense, is just as similar as either television productions with racing in the world or radio-style broadcasting for any sports. And it's very easy to kind of combine the two, in a sense. And we've seen that happening throughout, you know, last year and as well as this year, where television is utilizing esports people to help broadcast the world of esports.
Yeah, I think the Fox guys actually got nominated for an Emmy for it.
Yeah, no, that was really cool to see, and I think Taylor's got a great point there, which I'll get to in just a moment, but just to answer your question in full and proper, it's largely the same for me. I would spend my childhood days taking my little 164 diecast, and I would take masking tape and make the outline of whatever track the Cup Series was at on the living room floor on our wonderfully 1970s-esque plush carpet every week.
Oh, yeah.
And get all the way down to, like, the wall markings. I'd take Sharpies and, you know, write Daytona with the stars on it, or, you know, do Victory Lane, or put the margins and the lane markers in at Texas and Charlotte, which will eat up a whole second round of practice on a Saturday morning, let me tell you. But I would always just call those races. So it's always been a passion of mine, always something I wanted to do since I was little. And I would say my journey proper starts when I meet a fellow by the name of Jacob Seelman, who works with National Speed Sport News, who for a long time has been involved in the iRacing scene, just about from the very get-go. And Jacob and I met, I think it was 2013, and became very close friends. And at the time, he was working with LSR-TV and had been on the Real Sim Racing Cup Series for a while, and asked me to step in and help him out. First, just as a sort of tester, but then eventually to take the whole thing over, since he had too many commitments on his plate. So my proper start in that sense came in the winter of 2016-2017. And then it was through all of those broadcasts that I met Cisco Scaramuza, who ended up being our first producer and now works as a media producer at iRacing. So he's part of the team that works in Kelmsford at the iRacing offices that mm-hmm. puts together the broadcast. But before all that, he was first the LSR TV producer and then a buddy of mine. And we got together with a few friends in 2018 and came up with the vertical integration idea for Podium that I talked about a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And so that's where Podium got it started. It's me, Cisco, Gary Sexton, who's our graphic designer today, and then DJ Lyon and Kyle Barnes. The five of us started Podium back in the fall of 2018, and we spent the first year knocking out stuff and doing our own leagues, doing our own thing. And then I would say got our big break doing the Replacements 100. There's a whole story to be told off of that, and that the very opening weekend of the pandemic last March, which we can get into. But that, I think, sort of flipped things and changed things and certainly lined us up for the better. And it's been just sort of full tilt between that and the iRacing world ever since. But to double back to Taylor's point before your next question, I think Taylor has a very good point in that the esports world of commentating, of broadcasting, I think evolves a little bit beyond traditional esports casting. And there's so much television influence, especially with iRacing, that I can genuinely say that in working the iRacing broadcast in the background, so I'm part of the production team for those as well, I feel like I've learned a lot of these same sorts of skills and things and have a pretty good feel for how TV broadcasts work. I mean, shoot, last night we did the Pro Invitational Series, and I had Drew Adamson, who's our producer for iRacing broadcast one ear, and Mark Smith, who's Fox executive producer for NASCAR on the other, feeding us the same sort of info that they do on Saturdays and Sundays when they're doing it in real life on TV. And I think in that sense, there are a lot of people who are being really well-groomed and prepared for a life in real-world broadcasting because so much of that TV influence has come over, especially in recent years. And my hope is that we can sort of be the first ones to crest the hill and lead folks over and get footholds in the RNs and PRNs of the world. And then when they ask for more talent and ask whether they should look, we can just say, hey, we got a whole bunch of people coming where we came from. Just take a look down that way. You'll probably find some folks that'll be of good use to you.
Yeah. I'm actually coming from the opposite side of that coin where I'm a car guy who got into doing sim racing because, like, I was never, ever going to drive a Corvette C6R in real life, so I might as well just do it in the video game. And that's how I initially got involved with Tora. Started running events there, and eventually the founder of Tora, Matt Hunter, who's also on this program, invited me to be on the Tora radio show, and I guess you can say the rest is history. But I definitely come at things definitely from a organizing the race kind of perspective, so it's very interesting the different sides of the coin, how people approach that kind of stuff. And it's really cool that you guys work with, you know, iRacing with the broadcasts and specifically with Fox as well. That's really cool.
I don't think people realize how much goes into that. The iRacing broadcasts have gone in the past year. They've blown up from, you know, maybe a 5 or 6 person operation to a, you know, proper, I would say, 10 to 15 person operation between your camera ops and your director and your TD and your audio editor, and then all the people that are sort of running down the virtual pit road to gather information just like they would in real life.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing with TV, where you see one of the pit reporters for Fox or NBC whenever they're doing NASCAR races or IMSA races or whatever. I don't think people realize that they're just sort of the figurehead and that there are multiple people that are going up and down the pit lane and the paddock to get the information that they end up reporting. It's a big operation, and it's kind of cool to see iRacing evolve to that, but it's gotten that big to justify it.
Oh, yeah. The platform definitely justifies having it that large. Like, even for Forza's stuff with their Forza Racing League that Shay Adam was helping with.
Right.
If it's anything similar to the production that I saw when they invited me out to talk about Tora back in 2018, I want to say. It was, like, a really involved production with, like, I actually had to put makeup on to go on camera, which is something I never was like.
Welcome to the TV world, baby!
Yep, I haven't worn makeup since doing theater in high school, so it's like, well, this is different.
you get used to it. I'm glad I know that now, so if I am ever so lucky, I'm mentally prepared for that, just being ready to wear makeup every day.
Yeah. It was also so surreal to share a broadcast desk with John Hindall, so it's like, that's not at all intimidating, but anyway,
John's also just the best human being.
Oh,
though, so.
Of course. Obviously. I'm not saying that just because he's my boss, but.
Oh, no. It's a, we know that John, you know, John comes into these broadcasts and, you know, isn't going to judge you. He's just here to have a good time and to perform his tasks and put out his craft to the best of his ability. And it doesn't matter what the form is, which is part of the reason why I think the IMSA iRacing Pro Series broadcasts have been so great. Yeah. Sebring was fantastic to listen
Sebring
to.
Sebring was fantastic. I can't wait.
Laguna Seca, which as of today is up on the docket. Is going to be a lot of fun, I think. And then I forget what we've got for the third one. Is it like Road America or somewhere?
I think it's either Road America or BIR.
I'm on the network.
I think it's Road America. I don't call me, like, I could be wrong, but I think it's Road America.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll be correcting myself sometime in the future whenever this does come out. So
right. I'm looking it up now just to make sure that we don't make ourselves totally look like fools. Okay. So. We'll have a correction here.
Okay. So
Road Atlanta. Okay, Road Atlanta. But another great
one
job.
One of the Road A's, right?
Yeah, right, yes. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So you guys started in 2019, correct?
Podium, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So obviously we need to talk about last year and kind of the sim racing boom. What kind of difference did you guys see between the 2 years? And just kind of a follow-up question. Do you see sim racing going to continue on this high that we have right now, or do you guys think it's sustainable, or do you think it's eventually people are going to lose interest whenever all the COVID restrictions come down and we'll just go back to the way things were?
Yeah, it's been a wild year. There's no doubt about it. I think life-changing for a lot of us, and I think in earnest, it did start with the Replacements 100 that we were fortunate enough to broadcast March 15th of last year, when NASCAR couldn't get the chance to go to Atlanta. You know, I got a call from TJ Majors about 5 p.m. that Friday, and he said, hey, we're putting together a race. You know, Dale Jr. and Willie Byron and all these guys are going to be running in it. And do you want to have Podium broadcast it? And I said, absolutely, we'd be honored to. Little did we know that we would set an all-time record for a stream of any iRacing broadcast ever. And amongst the independent streams, I think it still is the number one rated broadcast to this day. The only ones that have surpassed it are ones that have been part of NASCAR Saturday Night Thunder Series, or the qualifying for the Pro Invitational Series that they built in as that series evolved last year. So that, I look, is the turning point, as the sort of 1979 Daytona 500 of sim racing. It had similar sort of effect, because if that doesn't go well, I don't know if we have a Pro Invitational Series at all. But it was that broadcast that all the executives at NASCAR watched and made them realize, you know, this can work. We can make this work for the sport. And then I don't think I need to go into how big it was to have it on TV and what that did. So I think what we're beginning to realize here, after that initial wave in particular, and what I hope people are seeing, is that iRacing, sim racing, is never meant to replace the real thing. It can't, by nature. If you don't have the real-life cars, in iRacing's case, to scan, or the tracks for that matter, then you have no simulation to begin with. So anybody working in the real world should never feel like that sim racing is a threat in any way, shape, or form, especially with the top-level stuff. Yeah. What it is, however, is supplemental. And there are lots of ways that sim racing can support real life racing. We've already talked about it a little bit with the way that talent can be developed in the same way drivers can be developed. I think most people sort of know how that works.
I've been kind of referring to sim racing as the cheaper alternative to karting.
Yeah, in a sense. I think you're pretty dead on. Yeah. And like, you can train, you can learn. It won't be perfect and it won't be exactly like the real thing. Don't get me wrong. I will never try and claim it. But the software programs out there have become so sophisticated that it gives you a really good base to go off of.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of techniques that you learn in sim that, with a few tweaks here and there, do apply to real life. And in that sense, it really does give you a leg up when you get to the real world of things, no matter what part of the industry you come at it from, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. Taylor, what about you? What are your thoughts?
I think that like James said, you know, without the real thing, this would not exist. We have to have the real world racing in order for us to showcase the virtual.
Yeah.
I think this is a good way for people to maybe learn a little bit more about it. And it's more, how would be the proper word to say, more acquirable to get involved with compared to someone who may not be able to go and get a goat card or compete in a late model program or even work their way up into the Cup Series or any other major series if they don't have, you know, the proper funding or just even the time or certain circumstances. This is a great opportunity for them to at least see what they can do and enjoy it. And also, if you think about it, with the world of esports, there's certain things that we can do that the real world cannot do.
Yeah.
Like, we can test out, if, for those who remember back when iRacing helped build a Chicago street course for NASCAR, as well as help out with the building of the new short track going to where Auto Club is. We can do that in the virtual world and kind of test things out compared to doing something in the real world. So that's how I view the world of esports. It's a good testing ground for trying new things before actually applying it to the real world, but still making sure we rely on that real world data for us to know, hey, this is the proper thing for us to get the realest experience for those who want to learn more about it.
Fun car track combos too, I think.
We've
seen a lot of them. My personal favorites, just about any stock car at Twin Ring Motegi, which I think is a seriously underrated oval. And then you wouldn't think it, but the trucks at Belle Isle, especially since they don't have the high RPMs, actually is a really good combo.
I remember that race.
The Cup cars are a little bit overpowered. They've got too much horsepower. But if you're sitting at 6,000-7,000 RPM, like, I think it scales appropriately, especially when you compare it to the IndyCar or any sports car, the downforce that they come to that track with, which, even though it's one of the hardest in all of iRacing, no question, it's one of my favorites. I love that kind of challenge, even though I get my rear end kicked seven ways to Sunday every time I race there.
Yeah. And who doesn't love to see the trucks go around the road course?
Yes.
I mean, that's probably one of the most entertaining things anyone could watch is the NASCAR trucks at any road course.
Mm. Or any of the NASCAR cars at any road course.
Right.
Yeah.
Our co-owner John Theodore has made this point many a time that the current Cup cars have evolved to the point where they're much more like the sort of Grand Am and Trans Am cars like the 80s and the 90s. They have that level of technology, which means that, maybe not surprisingly, they're best suited for road course races. And you look back in the past 10 years or so, you know, since the Gen 6 car came out in 13, what have the best races been more often than not? On the whole, everybody looks forward to Sonoma and Watkins Glen because some of the best finishes we've had have been there.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's a testament to where these cars are going.
Yeah. The next gen car, I've been kind of referring to it kind of just in the back of my mind as the next step towards the American version of the V8 supercar.
Yes.
Which pretty much.
I am totally on board for.
Oh,
honestly.
If you want to know how much I love supercars, put it this way. I followed Scott McLaughlin back when he was in Super 2 he got to Gary Rogers Motorsport. Before, and this is, all before DTR Team Penske. I celebrated so hard at 3 a.m. in the morning when he won Bathurst a few years ago. My roommates thought our house was being burglarized. That's how excited I was. So, yeah. No, let's have some fun with this. The next-gen Cup car is very much leaning on the Gen 3 supercar, which in turn leaned a lot on the Gen 6 Cup car, which in turn leaned a little bit on the Car of the Future supercar that they introduced in 2013. There's been this back and forth, which I think is hilarious. And what we're seeing, ultimately, is that, I genuinely think we're going to see at least those two series start coming towards a very similar platform, if not identical in the future.
Kind of,
and
like
I won't
the whole...
totally rule out the idea that they both end up just going full GT3, because I think that's totally on the table, too, if we really sit down and think about it.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that either.
It's close.
Just because another GT3 series? Come on, people.
Exactly. I mean, we have so many GT3, both probably in the in the virtual and in the real world. Kind of oversaturated.
NASCAR owns IMSA, though, so it wouldn't be hard to, you know,
at least
merge. That's certainly possible. Now, you could draw it out, but, like, that's the general direction that everything is headed in, that these cars are all going to become more like GT cars, and they are going to get smarter and smarter and smarter. And in turn, that also opens up places further down the ladder for things like I brought up the car store earlier, especially since, full disclaimer, I do work their races and help with their broadcasts too and run graphics for them. But that sort of cheap, sort of almost non-highly technical packages that you can get from a Ford and a GM, like a crate motor or, you know, a standard body or whatnot, that form of racing is going to have a place, I think, underneath what we see at the national levels of stock car racing, supercar, sports car racing, even more so in like 10 years, I think, than we have now, because they're going to be so much more different because everything at the top's just going to get so high tech.
Yeah. I kind of want to, if everything's going towards GT3, like you say, though, James, I'm kind of wondering where the Trans Am series kind of fits into that hierarchy, just because
it's
basically the Gen 6 with a wing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. More or less,
pretty much for the most
part. TA2 car specifically.
I know you're thinking TA2 for sure. I would argue probably again a lower cost version of Cup racing that maybe gets a little bit more like NASCAR in a decade than we've ever seen it before. And I think, in a general point that I am fully in favor of, pretty much across the board on motorsport, that Trans Am works going forward if you have a cost cap. And if you can say unequivocally that you can go racing in Trans Am and, you know, maybe spend $50,000 to $100,000 a year tops to make sure that you're all in good shape, like, that's significantly lower than any budget you're going to find for any of the national series in NASCAR, or, you know, even some of the stuff you see with the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship or even Pilot Challenge. So if you set up cost caps and tier them amongst your series, I am a full believer that there is a place for any type of car so long as you frame it correctly in that way.
Yeah. Trans Am's kind of my favorite series that I don't get to watch that often just because, like, I'm a Mopar guy, so it's like,
oh, yeah,
I can watch Challengers there. I'm good.
Oh, yeah, no. There's great racing. It's done a lot of wonders for a lot of the NASCAR drivers who have gone racing on road courses. I know Justin Haley, Triple J, as I like to call him, since I knew him way, way back in the day before he made it to the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series. But he'd been running a lot of and did run a lot of Trans Am stuff early on in his career just to get used to handling a full-body car on a road course. And he was glowing in the praise of both the series and the amount of things that he learned that helped him be successful when the National NASCAR Series got to the road courses and race. So, yeah, there's totally a place.
Yeah, if I can bring it slightly back towards the esports.
Right.
Trans Am, we did a really interesting thing with Trans Am, with their, like, esports activities. I believe they were using, I think it was...
R-Factor.
Yeah, R-Factor. And just running the Corvette C6Rs, which was interesting.
Old school, baby.
Old.
Yep. Same thing they used with the 24 Hours of the Mall they did in R Factor 2 last year, yeah?
Yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah. Let's not go.
Let's not talk about that one.
So, just a couple more minutes that we have here. So, if someone wants to, like, start doing broadcasting, what would be your suggestion to kind of get involved with that?
Mike, you want to take that one first?
Yeah. Understands that unfortunately the upfront cost is high, and to do this you are going to need a computer that runs things well, and you are going to need to put down a little bit for a better mic and headset system. I would say the Audio-Technica headset for $200 is a great way to get great sound and get an all-in-one package. So, and I can write up value packages left and right, but make sure that you understand that it is going to take a little bit and that you don't necessarily get the payoff and the monetary profit that you want. So you can't be in it to do that. You have to be in it for the love of the crafts and of broadcasting, period. And then just don't be afraid to find lower tier leagues. It doesn't matter if you have maybe 2-3 people watching your league live, so long as you get the chance to get the experience and learn. And in the beginning, it won't be glamorous. I totally lucked out. I definitely got to shortcut that a little bit because of the people that I know. But even then, the broadcast that I did back in the day, you know, we'd be lucky to have 20, 30 people watching them live. And it's obviously expanded now. But you're not going to get a lot of viewers in the beginning. But those who are plugged in to the community will recognize good talent. And people in power, if they are decent stewards of the companies that they put together, will see your craft, will notice your craft, and will give you opportunities. In that sense, it is exactly like what you find in real life. And I think if we are to use a very pertinent example, what we've done with our Sunday night broadcast, the MPI Cup Series, that booth we put together entirely off of talent that we had seen on smaller channels that we knew were good, but just hadn't had a platform as big as ours to showcase what they could do. And so we said, yeah, let's get our Devin Henrys and our Kenneth Buenos and our Michael Guerrillas on, and let's give them the opportunity to be successful on our platform so that they can get their name out there, so that we can teach them a little bit, and so that we can start elevating everybody up. The more people that you showcase, the more folks that you see can actually do this well, I think the better everybody looks in sim racing. And it's something that as we grow at Podium, we definitely want to try and do more of going forward. Get more races, get more broadcasts, and bring in more types of talent, especially across different disciplines, be it dirt or road or rallycross or open wheel or whatever. We'll do anything. We're not limited to oval. It's just that we all come from oval backgrounds. I mean, yeah. Shoot, I'm from Winston-Salem. The Winston Cup headquarters were, you know, 15 minutes from my house. So it's only natural that that's where we start. But we'll do anything. We're happy to take on anybody. It's just a matter of getting this to slowly grow and groundswell and get people to look at it the right way, like Taylor said earlier.
I think for me, the best advice I can give is be someone who loves to tell stories, because in the world of esports or broadcasting, you know, as a whole, you are there to tell the story of what's going on, listening as well to those who you're working with, because you know, you only have two ears, you have one mouth. So you have to make sure that you listen to what other people are trying to do and feed off the energy of those you're working with. It's probably one of the best things I could say, because even though there is races sometimes where it could be a little interesting of how we can try to hype things up or make it interesting, because there is points in times where racing can get a little bit of just single file at some points, not going to lie, but still trying to find that one thing about a driver or a team that may spark something in someone watching, like, wow, that's pretty cool, I never thought of something like that, is probably one of the best things, and also something that a lot of some of the great broadcasters and pit reporters make sure that they hit in order to add extra flavors to the story. And also, as James said, make sure that you, you know, network. That's probably a big thing in anything you want to do, is get to know people, talk with people, you know, try to make sure that you have something lined up so that way you could showcase your talents. That way someone can come up and say, you know, hey, this kid's or this person's got it. They can do it. Let's bring them up and try them out. And that way you work your way through. That's how both of us pretty much started out, was just meeting the right people and networking. And that's pretty much the best advice I could give, is just make sure you network.
Yeah, that's a great point. I had a great conversation with Hannah Newhouse of MRN about this just last weekend. And she made the point to me that in some cases, it might not necessarily be about how good you are at announcing at the very top levels. In some cases, I would argue a lot of cases, and she argued this case as well, it's more important to get along well with your coworkers and your team. And it doesn't matter if, you know, maybe you might not have as much talent as the person over there, but if the person over there is just off in their own corner and reading a book and not really socializing and trying to be a part of the general team and the group, then it's a little bit harder for people to justify giving them opportunities when you've got someone who really is trying to get in good with the broadcast team they're working with and just be a part of it. So definitely don't be afraid to just build up the real life relationship side of things as well, especially with the folks that you're working with, be it real life racing or virtual.
One thing else, so if I can add, is don't stick to one particular type of series. Granted, if you have a specific series that you like to work with or a certain type of racing, great. That is awesome. But if you can branch out to different things, like, you know, originally I started off with oval. That's what my preferred is. But then next thing you know, I'm doing sports car racing. And I'll be honest with you, sports car racing is probably my go-to. but also we can do dirt rallycross. It's important to branch out as well, so that way you can be just about a jack of all trades when it comes to broadcasting, in a sense.
Love sports car racing so much.
Yes, we do.
If I'm racing, I'd rather be either sports car or any car racing. As I've gotten older and gotten more experience just dabbling with the sim, my three picks are any car, sports car, and then the NASCAR Legends cars. Those three, hands down, are my favorites.
Yeah, I think we can all agree on that. All right, so last thing, where can we find you guys on the internet?
You can find us at our website, www.podiumesports.com. That's got more of our sort of press release information. It's got a forum where if you're interested in potentially having us broadcast your next event or series, we've got a forum that people can fill out so we can take a look at what you're thinking, and maybe you'll have Podium on your next show, perhaps. We'd be remiss not to mention the Twitch channel. Most of our broadcasts happen at twitch.tv/podiumesports. And you can tune in there. You can also head to the YouTube channel, the Facebook page, the Instagram, and the Twitter, all Podium Esports, straight up, no spaces or slashes or anything wild about that. But we'll post about our broadcast there as well. I guess on social personally, James B. Pike on all platforms for me, Instagram, Twitter, where have you. Taylor Burris is, I think, what? BRR_Taylor45 most places.
Pretty much, yeah. And of course, you can also find me on our weekly shows that I do as well, involving esports. In fact, the iRacers download, which we record on Thursday nights, and then of course goes out on Apple Podcasts, etc., Speed Sport, NASCAR Digital Media.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Well, thank you guys for sitting down with me and talking about all this. Now back to me and Lewis in the booth. And back to the future we are, minus a DeLorean. great Scott! Anyway, thank you to, of course, James and Tyler for agreeing to, you know, sit down with me and talk about all that stuff. If you want to follow Podium Esports, they are on Twitter and Twitch at Podium Esports, all one word, on both those platforms. Also, since Matt did this whenever they had James and Angus on last week, we will occasionally pre-announce our guests for the Simcast. So if you have questions that you want to ask our guests, because we always love having other people on the show, you can make sure to tweet us at Simcast Radio, hashtag Simcast RSL. Share with us what your question is for our featured guests. So, back to a more traditional piece of sim racing news. Louis, MotoGP 21 is out.
Yes, it's out now for console and PC. A bunch of returning features along the lines of customization and basically hop on a bike and run, along with some new features that are going to happen along the way. For instance, the long lap penalty, which is effectively a drive through only riders would have to take corners incredibly wide and such.
Yeah, I had to look
that penalize themselves.
I wasn't really sure with what that meant, and I didn't quite understand it fully. It's like a pace lap and a joker lap combined into one, or not yeah. Pace lap, a drive through. Sorry.
Yeah, effectively. So you have that one, and another interesting thing is if, in the past, if your rider had fallen off the bike, whether it be from collision, a high side, low side, or just running off the track, where it would just respawn on the circuit itself as it goes briefly until you got up to speed again, then it would bring you back. Now, you have the option of running back to your bike after a fall, and you have full control over that, which I found rather interesting and rather another detail for the immersive parts of it. The only downside to that, unfortunately, is if you're in a race with AI, they do not follow the same parameters, so they would just be a ghost as well.
Mm.
Track, so it's really something you want to do against the AI, but it would work out really well for leagues.
Definitely an interesting idea, though. I'm looking forward to running compilations. Like, they crash, and then it's like, well, the image that we're seeing They crash at like turn one at Le Mans, and mm-hmm. their bike, you know, like you're laying at the apex of the corner, and your bike is like the whole way across the gravel trap in like the opposite wall. So that's going to be like a 2 minute run to probably go get your bike.
It can be, or feel like a 2 minute run anyway.
Yeah. Well, you're running in gravel too, so that would be less than ideal.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, that's a good question. How realistic is the running physics?
I don't know. We're going to have to find that out from somebody, I think.
Yeah. Honestly, I haven't really picked up a bike game before, but I think I might want to try this one out. I'm not sure yet.
Well, let's see if we can convince you here with this other feature when it comes to the career mode on this one, because it's definitely an aspect I don't think has happened before. So, obviously, in the past, you've had the option of being a contracted rider, for lack of a better term, and sign your contracts and work your way up from Moto 3 all the way up into the top tier class of MotoGP. Mm-hmm. Now you can also create your own team, develop your bikes, and then once you get to the top tier, regardless whether you're a contracted rider or own your own team, you can have your own junior team and manage every aspect of that as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Rather unique.
Yeah, I don't
play on the career mode. I don't think anybody else has done that
that way.
Yeah, I can't
think of another case like that. It's not like like an F1 game where you have your Red Bull team, and then while you're running that, you also have to manage the F2 team or the F3 team. So
right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I think the closest that's come to this has been the NASCAR games in the past, where you can have multiple cars in the different various series of NASCAR, but I believe you had to be a driver in the car itself, yeah. And you couldn't hire a hot shoe, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I both think that is the case, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the NASCAR games career modes are all also kind of strange, if that makes sense.
Yeah. They are. So, other features that included on this is, once again, all 20 bikes for the 20, or not 20 bikes, 20 tracks for the 2021 season, and over 120 riders for all three top tier Grand Prix series. So that's Moto 3, Moto 2, and MotoGP itself. Also included is going to be 40 historic riders and their most iconic bikes from the past. So I don't not have that list in front of me of who it is and what bikes they are on.
What type of timeline are we talking here? Are we talking like 80s, 90s?
I think you're going to see it across the whole spectrum, all the way from the 70s, where the American swing really started kicking in, and the American style with the knee dragging came into effect. And so basically from the dawn of Kenny Roberts all the way up to Kevin Schwantz and Wayne Rainey of the sort. Yeah. All the way back from those days to more modern times, with maybe one or two versions of Valentino Rossi, maybe with his, more than likely, his last, or the last two-stroke world championship winning bike, along with the first four-stroke championship winning bike. So 2001 and 2002 bikes.
Okay.
So.
Very interesting. So, Willis, what platform is this on and how much is it?
It's consoles and PC, and like we said, it's out now. Looking at €39.99, so I'm guessing that's probably going to be somewhere around $50 American, maybe $60.
I checked before the show, so it was $50 on the Steam.
Oh, okay, very nice.
Yep. There's also two DLCs. One, it's five legendary liveries from drivers of the past. I don't know if they're the same drivers that's included in the iconic name part of it, or that's just in addition to. And there's also a give me all of the experience all at once so I don't have to grind in this game DLC. Both are $5. But anyway.
Yes, let me go ahead and get double the achievements for one little tiny time trial win.
Yes. Anyway, if I do decide to get MotoGP, I'll probably will end up talking about it on the show at some point. you know, we've been recording shows together for how long now? I think it's been 3 or 4 years.
I think we're converting him, ladies and gentlemen.
I think you're converting me.
I think we're converting.
Somewhere Matt Hunter just went, huh? Anyway.
Gage just popped right up out of bed.
Yeah.
If he was even in bed.
Anyway. So be on the lookout for more MotoGP 21 news, because I'm assuming there's going to be DLC at some point down the road. More or less.
More or less.
Anyway, so following the really long interview that Matt and Jordan did, like I mentioned earlier in tonight's program, we have a lot of esports roundup of the last 2 weeks to go through. Before we start, quick shout out to Jimmy Broadbent, who made his Brit Card debut at Silverstone last Saturday. He and his teammate Jim Hempworth took a pair of fourth place finishes in their 87 Praga, number 87 Praga. Very good showing for a a self-proclaimed shed dweller, if I can speak.
Shed dweller.
Yes. Shed dweller. Very good turnout for Mr. Broadbent there for finishing that well for being just a sim racer. But anyway, first of all, on our docket for the evening is the IMSA iRacing Pro Series. The second round of the IMSA iRacing Pro Series, presented by SimCraft, not us, took place at the WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca last Thursday night. Daniel Morad would take pole position in the LMP2 class, but by a great move at turn 1 on lap 1 by Marco Bordatelli, would see the Italian take the lead. He would then held off Morad at bay for the remainder of the 1 hour race and go on to take victory by 2.4 seconds for the GRT Grasser Racing Team. Morad and James Finch would then complete the LMP2 podium. A GTLM Rodrigo Flocker, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Flocker? Yep.
That's so close to Freudian slip, it's very uncomfortable. Flocker would...
It's closest we're going to get to you, cousin.
Yes. Flocker would take pole position for Ferrari, which is good, because I don't think I've actually seen Ferrari do that well in his IMSA series, and he would lead the opening stages of the race. However, the BMW M8 big boys would eventually catch up, with Philip Ng passing Rodrigo at the Andretti hairpin to take the lead. Ng would go on to take victory by 8 seconds, with BMW teammate Conor De Filippe also working his way past Fokker to take P2. Fokker would then, of course, finish podium in third place. Next week, unfortunately, is actually the last round of the IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by SimCraft. Drivers will take to the virtual Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta for the final race next Thursday at 6 p.m. on May 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern, with coverage in Sound Division, of course, on IMSAradio.com. Louis, you want to talk about the Porsche Esports Championship?
Yes, I'll take both of them if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Awesome. The Porsche Esports Championship finale at Monza, the final event of the 2021 season, which sees rookie Charlie Collins take the pole position at Autodromo Nacional Monza. Our champion, Josh Rogers, who would qualify in fifth place, with Dane Warren, would come out on top on the 7-lap sprint race. That's a very short race, I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. With Charlie Collins and Mitchell DeJong completing the podium. 15 seconds separated the winner from 29th place. So, 7-lap sprint race, that doesn't entirely surprise me, but also very impressive in the very least. Johan Hartz would start the final reverse grid pole position for the feature race. The race would turn into a battle royale between teammates Rogers and DeJong, with champion DeJong taking the final checkered flag of the season. DeJong would take Sorry, Rogers would take second with Johan Haar third place, securing him with one of the final spots in the top 20 and the title that guaranteed themselves a spot in the Porsche Esports Championship grid next season. DeJong's second place would see him take runner-up spot in the title, outgoing 2020 champion Seb Jobe. His season came to a sad end. His hopes to take a P2 came to an end after an accident, sending him into the back in one. Did I read that correctly? His hopes to take a P2 came to an end after an incident sent him to the back of race one. Gotcha. Yeah, there we go. I got it. I was going to get there eventually.
Yeah.
Which would be compounded by a role in race two. Man, that dude just had no luck at all.
For that one, because as we've said before, Jordan actually writes these up for us, and he wrote earlier that Rogers was champion, and then he wrote that DeJong was the champion. So, pardon our confusion.
I swear we do this right way the first time. I swear.
Yes.
Or in this case, the second time.
Third time's a charm sometimes.
Okay. Now Porsche Esports Championship All-Stars were also at Monza. This is the brief one. Emily Jones would claim pole position for the final time in 2021, but a poor start and contact with Jardier would see her fall back. Borja Jazzo would go on to take victory in race one, with Matt Malone and Xavier Sanchez completing the podium. Maxime MXM would take the reverse grid pole for the final feature race of the year, but Emily Jones would make up for a poor start in race one and sail through to the lead on the run to turn one. From there, it would be plain sailing for her, who would come home to take the victory by 6 seconds. A fitting end to a champion season for Matt Malone and James West. For Gamer Muscle, round out the podium.
Yes. A quick mention of the British GT Esports finale at Donington Park. Our guest last week, friend of the show, Mr. Angus Fender, would
go, Angus!
Yes, he would go lights to flag and take victory from pole position in the GT3 class.
Go, Angus!
Yeah, he would actually win by over 10 seconds ahead of Michael O'Brien, with Joni Fannin completing the podium. That win would actually secure Fender second place in the championship behind our other guest last week, Mr. James Baldwin.
Go, my guys!
We're very excited, as you can tell. It would be a similar story in the GT4 class with... I always struggle with his name. Niles Naujox taking pole position and victory, thus securing him the GT4 podium, or championship trophy, excuse me. Jack McIntyre would take second in class, with Charlie Crosland, a former tour racer, taking third.
Yeah, good on Charlie.
Yep. Just a quick mention of the eNASCAR Coca-Cola iRacing Series. Round 7 took place at Kansas Speedway on past Tuesday, so 2 days ago, with Ryan Glusa taking pole position. He and Chris Shearburn would trade the lead for the first half of the race, which ran caution-free, but shortly after the first restart, a Talladega-style wreck triggered by a spin for Michael DeJohn, again, or Mitchell DeJohn, excuse me, again, one of the busiest guys in sim racing, would collect most of the field, including Glusa. Shearburn was ahead of the wreck and would go on to hold off several challenges to take victory in a number 36 Letarte Esports Camaro. Much like the Real Cup Series, Shearburn would be the seventh different winner in 7 races. Keegan Leahy, Isaac Gunn, Logan Clampett, and Graham Baldwin would complete the top 5. The eNASCAR Coca-Cola iRacing Series will continue with Round 8 at Circuit of the Americas on May 18th. Always fun to watch Cup cars go around a road course.
Indeed, and kudos to DeJong there. Not only is he good on ovals, he's good in sports cars.
Mm-hmm. He's just good. He's quick. He's quite quick. You want to finish the last one, Louie?
I reckon I could do that one. This would be the eNASCAR iRacing Pro Invitational Series. This is round 2 of the eNASCAR Pro Invitational Series, which was at Talladega Super Speedway. Speaking of Talladega, they raced there in the Cup Series last weekend, and that's where the iRacing Series will be going. Anyways, Team Penske's Brad Keselowski taking his first win in the series. The dominant race leader for the majority of the event had been Rick Ware Racing's James Davison. Good name from IndyCar over there. After having qualified on pole, but a late race restart saw Keselowski able to take the lead and hold on to the victory. The win meant that iRacing would make $5,000 donation in Keselowski's Checkered Flag Foundation. So good on you, iRacing. Yes. That's a pretty cool thing there.
Yeah, I think we would be remiss not to mention this, that not only did Keselowski win on the sim, he also won on Sunday. And oddly enough, both races also featured a rolling Joey Logano.
That's the most amazing coincidence, yes. But unfortunate for Logano coincidence.
Yes, it's like poetry. It repeats itself.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The only way that could be better is if Ryan Blaney finished 12th in both races.
Hmm.
Driving the number 12.
Yes.
That's the only way that could have been better.
Yeah.
So, anyway, elsewhere, Kevin Harvick's 8-year-old son, Keelan, would take part in the race, but finished down in 38th place, 2 laps down. However, he would still be classified ahead of...
Goose, I believe I lost you there for a second.
You got me now.
Yeah, I got you now. There you are.
Apparently, I accidentally bumped into my mute button. Wonderful technology works these days. I'll go back to what I said. Elsewhere, Kevin Harvick's 8-year-old son, Keelan, would take part in a race, but finished down in 38th, 2 laps down. That's a cool thing that any kid would like to do, is race up against his racing heroes online. He would still be classified ahead of BJ McLeod and Eric Almirola, and the next round of the NASCAR iRacing Pro Invitational Series would take place on May 5th at Darlington. So who wants a virtual Darlington stripe?
Everyone gets a virtual Darlington. Yes. It's like Oprah, you get a Darlington stripe, and you get a Darlington stripe.
Everyone gets a Darlington stripe.
Yes. Before we start making bee jokes, that does bring us to the end of tonight's program. Like I said, a bit of a full show, so we didn't have an enormous amount of time to go off topic, but sometimes that happens during a show. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yep. I hope everyone enjoyed tonight's program. Any philosophy that you want to... to give to us this evening, Lewis, before we end tonight's program?
Eat more tacos.
Well, not going to argue with that. That does it for another episode of the Simcast. From all of us here, myself and Lewis, bye for now. Remember, be safe, wear your masks, wash your hands, and hey, get a vaccine if you can.
Eat more tacos. And another thing, Ben, never will you ever hear anybody sit down at the dinner table and be like, "Oh, bummer, more tacos."
Can't argue with that again. Bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.